Whenever we think about handling phone objections, we typically think about it in the context of if somebody says to you, for example, I'm not interested, well, then you should say the following. Or perhaps they say to you, well, I'm under contract, then you say the following. Today, we're going to completely reinvent the way that you've been handling your phone objections. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so today what we're going to do is we're going to talk about objections and specifically phone objections and how to handle them in a very different way. So as I was talking about before, the typical way that we've been taught to handle objections is someone throws a particular objection at us. It could be not interested, could be all set. It could even be a stall, like I don't have time right now, call me back next month, or send me some information. And when people say those things, well then, there are certain things we should say in response to those things. Now, there's nothing wrong with being prepared to handle those things, because I will tell you, the average sales rep is not properly prepared. It's like we like to wing things a little bit too much. We don't like formality. We don't like studying up in things and role playing and all that kind of stuff. So what do? We just kind of wait to the moment when these things happen and we deal with it. So, you know, being prepared to handle those things, certainly one way to do it, and you should do it. But in addition to that, what we need to do is find a way to create communication that is objection resistant. Meaning, I mean, like, wouldn't it be great if we lived in a world where we all knew exactly what to say so we would never face a phone objection? Well, I mean, I would love to live in that world. It would probably be best to say amen after a statement like that, because I believe that's more of a prayer. But the world that I live in, you know, objections are going to happen. So what I want to do is reduce the probability of phone objections happening by doing things proactively. So I have over, I would say, a good dozen or so ideas for you to consider. So this way we're not waiting until someone throws an objection at us. We could do things more proactively. And quite frankly, as sales professionals, you and I want to be in control like that. We want to control that dialogue so that we reduce the probability of getting a phone objection. So let's roll up our sleeves and begin, shall we? See, notice how nice and like formal I'm being today with you guys. I'll loosen up a little bit as we get Sunday morning here in New York. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with me today. Maybe I should be more laid back. Maybe drop an F-bomb or something. See how many people I can scare away today. But anyway, number one, the very first thing I want you to consider as to why you might be getting objections and what you can do to reduce your objections is that you might be a bit rusty with the phone. Now, there's two forms of being rusty with the phone. One form is that when you look at all the responsibilities that a lot of sales reps have, what happens is generally a lot of us are graded on three things, and I call it the three drivers of sales success. So the first thing is new account acquisition, right? That's number one. Number two, after we get that business, if we're not handing it off to someone else, if we're managing that relationship, item number two, at a minimum, it's kind of like a two-part to item number two, is we want to retain that account at a minimum, but we really want to wow that account, right, and just provide them with the best possible service so that the third driver can really kick in, and that's growing that business and expanding that business, and not only in volume, but getting into other product lines with them and other divisions and things like that. So when you look at all of those hats that we wear, and then you add in all the administrative things that we need to do to support those three drivers of sales success. Many times, especially the more established you become as a sales rep and the more you build your business, the harder it is to keep maintaining that hunting mentality and going out and hunting, because you're more in a service mentality. Now, I'm not justifying that. I'm not saying that's right, but that's what I see a lot. When I work with a lot of my coaching clients, a lot of time is being spent servicing that account. So what happens? We become a bit rusty with the prospecting. So let's talk about how we can fix that and make you less rusty. One of the things I've talked a lot about is this concept of the 2-2-2 formula. The 2-2-2 formula is something you're going to do each and every day. It's not a substitute for, you know, some hardcore prospecting where, like, you know, you're blocking out a good amount of time on a regular basis. But the 2-2-2 formula is designed to keep your name out there, but also keep you from getting rusty. So each and every day, what I want you to do, in the morning, you get up, you're kind of wiping the sleep out of your eyes, you're pouring that cup of Joe, pronounced coffee, where I come from, by the way, that is the proper way to pronounce it. And while you're doing that, while you're having your coffee, what you can do is you can tackle the first two twos of the 2-2-2 formula, if that isn't confusing enough. So what you can do is each and every day send two emails to two people that aren't doing business with you yet, that you're not like selling them anything. So what that'll do each and every day is that'll get two more messages out there, get your name in front of two more people. It will help you with your email writing chops, if you will. And, like I said, it'll keep you from getting rusty. So that's the first thing you could do. And you could, I mean, how long is it going to take you to do two emails? I mean, you're not rewriting each and every one, right? I hope by now you have some templates that you've been using and you just kind of, you know, customize them a bit. So that's the first of the 2-2-2 formula. The second thing that you can do while you're having that morning coffee is you can do two pieces of snail mail, or, if you prefer, two FedExes. That's gonna help you do a number of things, and I'm laughing because I mean, one of the things it's gonna help you with is your handwriting, because most of us were so used to typing things and everything else that our handwriting looks like, you know, like a 92-year-old grandmother's handwriting, not bueno. So it'll help you with that, and you're welcome for that. People are not gonna think that like you were drunk and writing them some kind of a note, but. Also, what this will do is, like, nobody does snail mail. And I think that's all the reason why you should do it. It's not as noisy of a channel, and it's going to help you. So you get two pieces out there to two people that you haven't sold anything to. Now, what that's going to do is that it's going to help you with those types of chops and awareness and people knowing who the hell you are when you pick up the phone eventually. Not a bad thing. So watch what's happened so far. We've completed two of the 2-2-2s that we talked about. Very confusing today, I know. Hopefully you're not listening to this on, like, no caffeine. And it's, like, early in the morning. Like, what in the hell is he talking about this week? So this is, like all in the morning before, like, while your competitor is, like, doing nothing and just, like, you know, I don't know, watching the news and getting all depressed, like, inside of, like, 3 minutes, right? Because that's what happens when you watch the news every morning. So now what you're going to do at a more godly hour, a little later when you get into the office or whatever, you're going to do the third part of the 2-2-2, which is call two people that you haven't done business with. So again, what this is going to do, it's going to keep you from getting rusty because every day you're practicing. Now, the other thing that I want you to keep in mind about being like a little rusty, it could be for that day. You're not, you know, let's just say you're prospecting regularly, but, you know, it's you haven't made any calls yet that day, so you really want to warm up. So one of the ways you can kind of keep from being rusty that day is to do a few things. Now, number one, call your voicemail. Before you get into the office, call your own voicemail, leave yourself a message, and I actually want you to do this on the way home, too. So it'll be a warm-up for that day, and also to keep from getting rusty in general. You could work the prospecting muscles. You're going to call your voicemail, and you could do a number of things. You can do your opening statement as if you were calling a potential client. You could do a voicemail as if you were calling a potential client. You could go through some specific talking points that you might have today for a specific company or person, rather, right? We're not calling a company, like the building. We're going to talk to the building, like a nut job. You guys know what I'm talking about. But anyway, I was just trying to like head off the sarcasm by making like the joke myself. But anyway, that backfired. So what you're going to do is you're going to work those muscles that normally like wouldn't be worked as much, because now you're calling your voicemail in the morning and you're calling it later in the day. And the other thing that I would recommend that you do is then listen to it. We're not just doing this like for shits and giggles, as they would say. What we're doing is we're doing this and then we're going to listen to it like through the ears of the person. Let's pretend like we're the person that we're trying to like do business with. Listen like from their perspective. Do you sound confident? Do you sound believable? Is what you're saying compelling? So what you want to do is obviously, you know, there's some things that you want to listen to there. But it's going to be very helpful to you because I want you to think about something. What I'm talking about here, the messages are going to take you no more than 30 seconds to leave because you really shouldn't be rambling on anyway, right? I mean, by the way, this wouldn't be the Sales Playbook podcast if I didn't have a tangent or three. Have you ever been the recipient of a message that just went on way too freaking long? I mean, think about that, right? So getting back on topic, what you want to do is you want to keep it short and sweet. No more than 30 seconds. Because also, if this is like too lengthy, you're not going to do the exercise every day. So I want this to be so simple that you'd almost have to like slap yourself and say like, dude, come on. Like, dude, I mean, Uncle Paul's talking 30 seconds out of my life here, right? Like you're not already spending more than that on, like, fantasy football or some shit like that. So what I want you to do is 30 seconds you're going to be spending on this voicemail message. Take another minute to evaluate what you're saying, because if it's only a 30-second type of message that you're leaving yourself, I mean, it's not going to take 3 years to evaluate your performance. So you spend another minute. So if you think about that, unless my math is crazy, you have about a minute and a half each time you do this, 30 seconds for the message, about a minute to evaluate it. You're doing this twice a day. So in 3 minutes a day, not only are you spending 3 minutes more than your competitors are spending to get better at the phone, but you are giving yourself the gift of working these muscles. And beware, I mean, this stuff really adds up, because if you're doing it twice a day, two of these practice sessions a day at a minute and a half each, that's going to be 10 each week. It's going to be 40 each and every month, and what, like 480 a year, and like 480 more than you're doing now. And the best part, it's like you're almost doing this in your sleep, because at a minute and a half, you really don't feel it. And a little hint for you, if you drive to the office or whatever, I mean, why not do it then? You're in the car anyway. It's a minute and a half. Just do it safe. You know, use your headset or whatever, and, you know, the Bluetooth, and you're good to go. So that's the very first thing. Just kind of understanding that to make it objection resistant, we want to make sure that we're warming up. The final component of the warm-up is to consider sparring before you get on the phone. Now, what I mean by sparring is having someone, perhaps one of your coworkers, it could be a friend, it could be your significant other, it could be, I don't know, someone in your LinkedIn network that's also in sales. And what you do is you agree that at least one time a week, you're going to call each other and you're going to role play. And what you're going to do is you're going to call up and you're going to call them Like in full role play, you're not going to go and like waste a lot. Hey, how you doing? And what's up? And shooting the shit. What you're going to do is you're just going to go right into that role play. You're going to have it scheduled to each other. You're going to call up and you're going to do your opening statement as if you were calling a potential client. Now, what they're going to do is now they're going to give you a hard time. They're going to push back on you and they're going to throw objections at you. My suggestion is that you have a rule. And the rule is that you have to give them three like really good responses to every like different responses to every objection that they throw at you. So if they say not interested, you've got to give them three rebuttals to that. If they say, well, you know what it is, I'm under contract, give them three rebuttals. You know what, I really don't have time to meet with you, give them three good rebuttals. Because if you practice tougher than reality, you're going to be really ahead of this. The problem with a lot of sales training is that, A, we do these like really stupid role plays that make us not want to role play. And then we baby people, right? So, you know, and in some cases we go too hard on them and then people like are really turned off to role playing. So what I say you do is you don't let the other person off the hook, but you don't have to be like a grade A dick about it. So, and then you obviously you take turns. So this is going to get you warmed up before you hit the phones. So that's the very first thing that I want you to do. The second thing now that could be that could really be helpful to you in creating more of an objection-resistant communication plan is just raising your awareness to what you're saying and how you're saying it. Most of us have no idea how we're coming across to other people and how the world is seeing us because there's a lot of reasons for it. I think most of the time we're just so wrapped up in the game of sales that we don't step aside and kind of view the game tape of sales. Other times, and I hate to say this, but it really has to be said, I think we're the most egotistical people on the planet, salespeople. And I wouldn't have it any other way, by the way. I mean, the good side of having an ego is that it's our body armor against all the rejection and silly stuff that the normal person would be like completely in therapy and like crawling inside a bottle of tequila over. But the ego protects you and I from us, but from that. But the problem with the ego is that it also protects us from the lesson, if you will, like the why. Like, why am I screwing up? Why am I getting peppered with objections? Why aren't I like setting appointments? Why aren't I selling more? Why aren't I like making President's Club this year? So you want to raise your awareness, and there's a few ways that you can do that. The first way is this concept of game tape, right? Think about your favorite sports team. What do? They watch the game tape. They want to know where they were strong so that they can go out and do it again. Most people aren't aware of that type of stuff, right? They're so busy playing the game. That's sitting there going, you know, as they're getting tackled, I'm going to make a note to self that when I try to go and cut right, that I'm going to get sacked. I mean, most people are not thinking about that, especially if they got hurt, knocked on their ass, get the wind knocked out of them, right? So you want to, when it comes to game tape, there are two flavors that if you are not driving in your car right now, I'd like for you to write down. So the first thing that you can do is like just hit the record button on your smartphone, provided you're using just like, you know, like your standard phone, right? Like a landline. I almost said landmine. Imagine that. Use that to make your calls, right? What you're going to do is tape your end of the conversation. Just kind of hit the record button and it's not recording the other person. And you can listen to yourself. And the reason why I'm recommending that you do that is because the laws, I believe, in the U.S. go state to state. It's not like some kind of a federal law when it comes to that. So, you know, to keep you guys out of trouble, I would do it that way. Okay? Tape yourself. You're allowed to tape yourself. And that's one way to do it. And the other way that you can do it, and then I'm going to tell you what you're going to be watching and listening for, is to videotape yourself. You don't have to do both all the time and everything else, but and do them separately, right? Don't just say, well, I could do both with a video camera. What the hell's wrong with Paul? Like, is he like living in like, you know, like 1733 or something like that? No. I mean, there is a rhyme and reason to this madness that I'm teaching you today. So the first thing is game tape where we're recording so we focus on our verbal message. What you want to do here is focus in on what you're saying and how you're saying it. In other words, the packaging of those words. Now, the video camera or the videotape is important because how you look is how you sound. So what I recommend that you do there is kill the sound and just look at your visual message. Now, you might be saying, boy, he's really gone off the deep end, this Castain guy. Because if Castain, like, hello, McFly, if I'm making a call, why do I have to worry about my visual message? Nobody's going to see me. And, you know, on the surface, you would be correct, especially the part about me going over the deep end. Well, there's a reason why we do this. Because how you look is generally how you sound. It's an early warning indicator of the verbal message. So if you're looking at a tape and you're not smiling, you're looking at a tape and you look angry, you're looking at a tape and maybe it just looks like, without listening to yourself, that like you're chewing somebody out instead of having a dialogue. If you're looking at a tape and you seem defensive, or you seem like you're withdrawn, or like you're Years ago, and this is silly me sharing this, but I just want to continue to be an open book with you guys. I watched a videotape years ago of me at a family get-together. And honestly, I had no idea just how shy I was at that point, especially this was like 30 years ago. There was no eye contact. I was kind of like looking at the ground. I was kind of avoiding the camera, that kind of stuff. And you know, it was just very, like, it was a big eye-opener for me. And I think there are things about your mannerisms that you're not familiar with that I believe people on the other end of the phone can pick up on. So that could be leading to your objections. So now, that's kind of the game tape part of it, but still, the thing that you want to think about also is, okay, so what can I do to interrupt my pattern when I'm on the phone and maybe I'm just not, you know, on message with my visual part of the messaging? Well, keep a mirror on your desk, right? We've all heard that. And that's one of those things in sales, like write a thank you card. Like, we'll all say duh, but nobody's doing it. So like just like go to CVS or something like that and buy a freaking mirror, put it on your desk, and understand how you look is how you sound. And also, it will remind you to smile. People can hear a smile on the other end of the phone, and I think it has a very big impact on your overall message. But now, we talked about your awareness with the game tape. Now, it's the other person's awareness, the person that you're calling. Now, when I say that, I don't mean that they should now do a game tape, right? Like send this to them and, you know, Castain says you should do the game tape so you buy more shit from me. No, what I'm talking about is their awareness of you. Part of the reason why you might be getting gunned down on the phone is that people, you ready for this? Like, I mean, this is like mind-blowing stuff that I'm about to share with you. People are just not that comfortable with you. And they're not that comfortable with you because they just don't know you. And by the way, is that exclusive to buyers, or are you like that too? Because I know I am. If I don't know you, I have a higher probability of pushing back and getting you off my phone. So, sounded like I was getting emotional about that. Like I was ready to like break down and cry over that. But no, I'm cool. I'm cool with that, man. I promised myself I wouldn't cry today. But their awareness. Now, as far as their awareness goes, this is where we get into my favorite word in the whole wide world, which is propinquity. And for those of you who haven't heard me say it 700 times, like in the last month alone, propinquity is nearness, this feeling of nearness and closeness and kinship and like that familiarity that we have with people. And to me, this precedes know, like, and trust, right? This feeling of nearness and closeness and kinship. So this is also a testimonial to having multiple touches, forms of touches, not just the phone. You see, when I ask sales rep, hey, besides the phone, what else do you have? Most people will say an email proudly. Like they'll say, an email. I don't just use the phone. I use email. Great. What else do you have? And it's funny because it's a great exercise in human behavior. Because when I'm doing a keynote speech and I ask that question, at first everybody's looking at me. And I say, okay, well, you know, beyond the phone and email, what else you got? Eye contact starts to like be broken. People suddenly have to check their phone or look at their shoes or whatever. I don't know. Like run out of the room and get violently ill. It's just they don't want to deal with it because like we're really bad at that as sales professionals. I think in some ways we rely too much on the phone. And you have extremes of that, by the way. You have people who rely too much on the phone and people who like avoid the hell out of the phone. I'm saying there's room for multiple types of touches. And you have to keep in mind with you keep that in mind. So, you know, I want you to think about that. So besides the phone and besides email, well, are you using LinkedIn? Are you using snail mail? Are you using FedEx? Are you using warm intros? Are you using creativity? What other things are you doing or could you be doing that you're not doing? That's very, very important. And also it's important because the people that you're trying to get a hold of really might not be into the phone, right? That might be your preferred way of getting a hold of them, but it's not theirs. So just by design, they're going to shut you down if they answer their phone. If they answer their phone, right? So I want you to think about that, but understand that if we can create that sense of familiarity, like kind of like bumping into them in other places, like with a FedEx, a snail, you know, a form of snail mail, perhaps dropping in, perhaps something creative, perhaps over on LinkedIn, you develop a sense of familiarity. And what I always tell people that go through my webinars, and I'll offer it to you guys right now, many of you feel a sense of propinquity with me. And I don't say that in an arrogant, Castain is all full of himself and talking about himself in the third person type of way. I say that as a fact because many of you, you bump into me on this podcast. Many of you, once you become my clients, you tell me, Paul, you've been riding shotgun with me for years. I feel like I've known you already. I've gotten to know you. Other people, you bump into me over on LinkedIn or over on Twitter or perhaps somewhere else, right? Perhaps I call you and I'm talking to you about possibly doing business with Castain Training Systems or you receive something in the mail from me, but it's all good. It's not one versus the other. And don't you dare ever let anyone, including your boss, tell you that it's one versus the other. It's all of the above. In fact, I always talk about this really corny movie but I actually like the damn movie. So I don't know if I should be embarrassed or not. There was this movie back in 1991, and it had a lot of people in it, like Christian Slater and Patrick Dempsey and all these people back then. And it was called Mobsters, right? And it was really about, it was very interesting because like they took a lot of creative license, but it was about mobsters like Lucky Luciano, what was his name? Meyer Lansky and a lot of these people back in, I guess, like during Prohibition. And there's this one scene where Lucky Luciano met with Rothstein, right? I forget his first name. I don't know why I'm just like drawing a blank, but he met with this guy Rothstein. Rothstein gives him and he's like, pop quiz. He goes, you're walking down the road and you suddenly notice that, you know, that you're being tailed by two gunmen. And suddenly also at the same time to your left, there are two more gunmen approaching you, going for their guns. Who do you? And he cuts Lucky Luciano cuts him off. And what he was like starting to say is, who do you kill first? And he cuts him off and he says, I reject the question. To live, I have to kill them all. And to me in sales, it's not about, well, is it cold calling versus social selling? To me, it's to thrive because we're really not looking to kill other than kill it or crush it. For us to thrive in sales, it really has to be all of the above. So that right there can create a sense of propinquity. So that when you pick up the phone, they have more familiarity with you. And it's going to lower the probability when we add in these other factors that we're going to talk about of them pushing back. So next, the next thing you're going to say, duh, but I really urge you to hear me out on this. It's your research. So many people, I mean, I never realized how many people prospect so unprepared. I never realized it at such a high level until I started my own business 6 years ago. So now that I own a business, I'm on the receiving end now of a lot of really poorly articulated pitches. And the biggest thing is that I sense that there's absolutely no research at all, or somebody's trying to bullshit me, which I don't want to go into too much detail, but somebody fairly well known who wanted to be on my podcast sent me a thing saying that he had listened to my podcast and everything else, and he just wasn't he didn't do his homework. I mean, if he had done his homework, one of the things he would have realized too is I really don't have guests on my podcast. I've done it twice, you know, in 6 years, actually 7 years that I've been podcasting. So, you know, people who are reaching out to me and even like asking me who the person is to talk to about whatever it is. I mean, shit, my name is on the door, Castain Training Systems. You are speaking with Paul Castain. I mean, you know, it's like kind of like a prospecting 101 thing. But what's going to happen with doing good research, it's also going to boost your confidence because you know that, hey, I'm worthy of calling you. I've done my homework here. But also, I think it's going to make it less likely for them to shut you down. So there's a few things about research that I want to talk to you about because this is one of those things. Everybody always tells you to like do your homework, but they really don't give you a lot of good suggestions, specifics on how you could do it effectively. So the first thing that I just want to tell you about homework is many of us, or doing our research, a lot of us, like, there's two extremes here. One extreme is that we don't do the research because we feel it's too time consuming. And the other extreme is that we just become a full-time research analyst, which to me in many cases is an avoidance activity and might be more of a procrastination type of thing and a call reluctance thing that you have going on, and you kind of need to have that Dr. Phil moment, a little bit of soul searching there. But most people really are hesitant with the research because they feel it really takes away from the amount of calls that they're making. Now, that's true to an extent. My theory is that if I've done proper research and I have all the other elements in line, like an effective opening statement and things like that, I think I'm not going to have to make as many calls. So it's going to be less calls but more targeted calls. So the first thing I want to tell you when it comes to research is that there is a really cool rule that you can follow. It's not my rule. It's a gentleman by the name of Steve Richard came up with this, and I just think it's brilliant to the point that I wish I was the one who came up with it. And it's called the 3x3 rule. When it comes to research, the 3x3 rule. So what you're going to do when you're researching a potential company and the individual too, because it's not just the company, it's the individual. Because again, you're not selling to the building, the brick and mortar part of it, you're selling to a human being. So you want to research them too. So when it comes to that, the 3x3 rule is as follows. What you're going to do before picking up a phone, before shooting an email to them, because that counts too, what you're going to do is you're going to set a timer for 3 minutes. So that's your first three. Spend no more than 3 minutes. Now, you might be thinking, how in the heck can we thoroughly research somebody in 3 minutes? First of all, you would be surprised. If you know what to look for, you can do a hell of a lot in 3 minutes. But the second thing you need to keep in mind is that we should all be so good that we do one call closes. None of us are really that good. And yeah, every once in a while we have that kind of freak of nature sale that comes along where it is kind of a one call close. But what you have to realize is that think about all the calls that you typically have to make to someone just to like even get through to them. Just to get over some basic objections, just to get them to see you. But if each time you spend 3 minutes, right, think about how that really accumulates over time. So this isn't like a one and done type of thing. This is each and every time you're spending 3 minutes over the lifetime of hunting that account. I mean, hell, I have accounts I've been hunting for 6 years since I started my business, 6.5 years now. So it all adds up. So that's the first three. But the second three is you want to set an objective of challenging yourself to try to find three things that you can leverage to kind of warm up that call as an icebreaker of something to like get their interest. Now, you might be thinking, yeah, that sounds great, Castain, but what are those things? This is where I want you to write something down. Again, not if you're driving. I want you to pull the car over and I want you to jot this down. What you want to be looking for, ideally, is something called trigger events. And sometimes we call them triggers, sometimes we call them compelling events. But right now I'm just going to call them trigger events you want to look for. A trigger event is something that's going on in your potential client's world that would increase the probability of them needing what you sell, your solution, if you will. So let's say it again. A trigger event is something that's going on in your potential client's world that would increase the probability of them needing what you sell, needing your solution, right? So let me just kind of give you a bit of an example outside of sales, because I think sometimes that's the best, not really outside of sales, but more outside of what you guys probably do for a living. And then we'll get into some specifics. But imagine if you owned a tow truck company and you did repairs and you towed them to your shop and, you know, you fixed the cars up or whatever. Well, one way that we could do it is we could just like get lists of all the companies in the area and we can call them and we can give them our quote unquote pitch, right? We can kind of tell them we've got this local company and, you know, we might be there to able to help them. Do you have any needs right now? And, you know, here's the funniest thing. I mean, barring like how shitty I just said that, you could, I mean, I hope you know by now, I don't sell that for a living, so I'm going to be a tad rusty. But here's the deal. Statistically speaking, sooner or later, you would find somebody who might say, oh my God, you have the place bugged? I mean, you know, my car right now, I couldn't start it this morning. Yeah, man, let's talk it down. Get your ass down here and tow my car. Fix it, right? Statistically speaking, that will happen. And that's a lot of the time when we talk about sales being a numbers game, right? So that's one way to do it. But what if we knew or we looked along the highway for cars who had the hood up, smoke pouring out of the car, and, you know, like the owner of the car looking rather pissed off and like talking on their cell phone and flailing their arms, looking all kinds of aggravated, right? That's another way of doing it. So if we knew that along the highway, that's where people are going to be broken down and we went there, you see, that is a trigger. The car being broken down, if you're a tow truck company. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for the equivalent of that. So let me give you just a few examples. And before I do, I want to tell you that the thing that really got me going on trigger events was a few years back, I came across this gentleman by the name of Brian Carroll. And Brian Carroll had said that when you generate an opportunity because of a trigger event, there is a 400% higher probability of closing that business. And I want you guys to think about that. When you generate an opportunity because of a trigger event, there's a 400% higher probability of closing that business. Because again, it's like the tow truck. Sorry for the like gruesome like example, but it would be like selling tourniquets and knowing where somebody might be bleeding, right? Of course they're gonna need that tourniquet. So I'm gonna give you just a few examples, but there's a lot more to this, right? So just a taste of it right now. Things that you should be looking for, companies that are expanding. Looking at companies' earnings, both good and bad. Here's one that nobody ever looks for. If you look for companies that have just received venture capital funding and go to websites like VentureBeat and you know, companies like that, and go to like venture capital firms, not to prospect, but look at their website, because most venture capital firms have like proudly display all the logos of the companies they funded. Call the companies they funded, because if they've got a fistful of money and investors that need them to like give them a return on that investment. They are highly motivated to do something, provided, by the way, that you can help them increase top-line sales or bottom-line profits. They're going to be all ears. But also, we have companies that are experiencing product launches, companies that are hiring. I always say, companies that are hiring for a reason. It could be expansion or it could be turnover. If you have something that speaks to those things, either directly or indirectly. In fact, I want to take a moment to just like address that very, very quickly. When we're doing research and we're looking for trigger events, we need to think about things we can directly help them with and things that we can indirectly help them with. So let's talk about my business for a minute because I had better understand what I do for a living. So a lot of what I do, really all of what I do, is sales training. And it's coaching and it's things to help sales reps, sales leaders, business owners sell more. So I'm doing my research. And when I see a company that's experiencing a lot of turnover, that's a huge trigger event for a lot of reasons for me, by the way. And now, directly, I don't have a product that helps people reduce turnover. Like, in other words, I don't have a webinar, how to reduce your turnover, or a training manual, 1,001 things to do to reduce turnover. I don't have that product. Maybe I should. But what I do have are solutions that can indirectly help that. Like, I do consulting with organizations to help them hire smarter. I consult with organizations to come up with an onboarding program to get these reps ramped up. I consult with VPs of sales and sales management, sales leadership, if you will, and business owners to support the sales reps and have more effective sales meetings and have ongoing training and things like that. So indirectly, I can speak to that turnover thing. So I want you to think the same way, indirectly. And indirectly, that's going to open your eyes to other triggers that you might have been blowing off. But also, I want you to think about, like, as far as a trigger, a new contact with the company. A lot of times when you have someone who's new in a role, they have this whole piss and vinegar thing going on. Like all of us have for like 3 days, like when the new year comes, right? It's like, we're going to conquer the world. It's going to be the best year ever. And then we're back to doing the same old shit that we were doing before. But these people, they're new. And they need to get moving quickly to make an impact. So if you have something that can make them look like a rock star and get some stuff done, they're going to be all ears. Also, expansion, relocation, companies that are experiencing online reviews, right? And this, a lot of us now, I think we buy things by really looking to see what other people are saying about them. So especially if they have bad online reviews, and you can indirectly or directly help them with that, that could be very helpful. Now, that's only a handful of triggers. I actually share over 30 different triggers. I'd like you to write this down if you're not driving. I share them during our Prospect Like a Pro download that I have. And if you'd like to learn more about it, and you'd like to download the program, I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyourcoldcalls. All right. So now I beat the hell out of that one enough. Let's go on to the other ones now. Next, you want to consider redoing your opening statement and kind of reversing the order that you're using right now, right? So let's look at a typical opening statement when we're cold calling. And by the way, it's really the same thing when we're writing an email to a company, an intro email, if you will. Typically, our opening statement starts something like this when we call up. Hi, Mary, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and we are... And I start spewing all the things away. And many times it's like marketing speak, like we're a full service sales training company and we specialize in the printing industry and software and blah, 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 blah. Me. Right? And that is the wrong way to open up a call or to open up an email. Leading with something about you, 9 out of 10 times, is going to disengage the potential client. They're going to disengage. Because really at that point, if you think about it, they have no reason, incentive to really be motivated by anything about you at that point. So what I suggest that you do instead of leading with something about you is to lead with something about them and then tie it in with something about, when I say about you, something about your company and your solution, your products, your services, whatever. Now, before I move on, I want you to understand something. The biggest thing when it comes to this that is going to benefit you is that if you take this one thing only away from this podcast today, you are going to stand apart from like 99.9999% of your competitors, because just about everybody out there begins a call with something about their company. So now we're going to take this research that we've done and hopefully a trigger, and we're going to lead with that. And there is a really cool fill-in-the-blank phrase that if you haven't heard me say this one 700 times, I think 701, if you have heard it, will be the charm. And if you haven't, then the first time will be the charm for you. But the phrase that you want to use is, I noticed that. I noticed that. So now instead of saying, hi, Mary, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and we are a blah, 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 full service, marketing speak, bullshit, you know, garbage, you know, just like nonsense, right? Like, instead of saying that, now what we're going to do, it's going to be, hi, Mary, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems. I noticed that you're going to be expanding into the Long Island marketplace. Hi, Mary, it's Paul Castain. I noticed that you did a press release. You're going to be hiring 20 more sales reps in the Northeast region. Hi, Mary, it's Paul Castain. And I noticed that you have a new product that's going to be launching in October 2017. Do you see the difference? You see, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think that was the most brilliant opening statement ever. But I'm going to tell you that they're going to have a lot more interest in a trigger and leading with that, to the point that I think it's going to buy you another 30 seconds on that phone call to do some splaining, as my good friend Ricky Ricardo might say. Or might have said, because I believe he's been like dead for about 25 years. Be kind of effed up if he said something now from the grave, so to speak, unless I'm like channeling him. And that's like one of my many talents. But seriously, it's a lot more interesting when somebody, first of all, shows you they did their homework. Secondly, they touch on a trigger. See, the thing about triggers also that you have to keep in mind is that depending on the severity of the trigger and the importance of the trigger, the significance of the trigger, I think you have to realize that these are things companies talk about a lot. I want you to think about when your company has gone through different things. Like, I work for a company that was going through an acquisition. That was like all they were talking about forever, especially I was on the management team. That's all we were ever talking about. We had to have headcount a certain way. Every meeting we were obsessing over this damn acquisition. So depending, again, on the trigger, I mean, it's something that's talked about a lot. So you're touching on something that's front and center to them. You're not going to be front and center to them. I promise you, you're not. It's not something that they're really thinking about unless, again, you just happen upon something like, you know, just like you call them. And we've all had that where it's like, oh, wow, would you have the place bugged? How did you know? We were just talking about sales training, Uncle Paul, right? We were just listening to your podcast and you cold call us. Get your ass in here. You're hired. I mean, like, that's more the exception than the rule. So that's another thing that you can do. Redo and reverse the order of your opening statement. So you're going to lead with something about them, and then you're going to tie it in with like how you've worked with other companies in those areas and something in there. In fact, let's go to the next one, because now I can get more specific. What do you say next, right? The next thing that you want to do, which is going to make a huge impact on making your dialogue more objection resistant, is to use evidence. And evidence, just to define it, are things that we can use to reduce doubt and skepticism and people pushing back and ultimately objecting. So we want to proactively offer evidence to people, whether it be in any communication, by the way, whether I'm calling you or I'm sending you an email or I'm doing a WebEx. I do it all the time in podcasts and different things that I do when I'm communicating, because really evidence, as we used to say over at Dale Carnegie when I worked there, evidence defeats doubt. So let me give you a few different forms of evidence. There's over 12 forms of evidence, by the way, that I teach in that Prospect Like a Pro course that I had mentioned. But for now, I'll just give you a few just to get you thinking. But a few things that you can do would be provide examples to people. So don't just say something. Say, like, and I did that here, right? I've done that a few times during this podcast. I would give you examples of things to prove the point. So think about where you might be able to, in your opening statement, after you lead with something about them, then you kind of do a quick blurb about you. Maybe there's an example of how you've helped companies just like theirs. Maybe there's an example you can give them of how you've helped a company reduce, increase, decrease. Think of like the money words and the money verbs that you can use. Again, like increase, decrease, things like that. Also, anytime you can provide statistics, anytime you can provide studies, one of my favorite things would be analogies. Using analogies so that people understand what makes your value proposition so awesome, right? So that's something that you can think about. But the thing that I want you to think about when it comes to providing evidence is really who says so besides you. You see, this is going to sound like a really big stretch here, and you can really, it's going to take every bit of focus on your part to really buy into this. And I'm being sarcastic here, but you know, sometimes people, they just don't trust us salespeople. I know. I had to be the one to break it to you. It's horrible. You would think everybody would trust us and that there was never been a shady salesperson or they've never been burned by a salesperson. But yeah, I know. It's crazy, but some people just don't trust us. So we've got to proactively offer evidence to eliminate doubt. So really, that's part of the theory, that the best way to deal with an objection is to kill it before it ever happens. And that's one of the ways that you can do it. Last but not least, really, because there's so much more we can be talking about here, is you want, we talked about trigger events before, but what you also want to do in your communication with people is make sure that you hit emotional triggers. Emotional triggers, things that just really jumpstart the emotions. And there's all kinds of emotional triggers, but the one that I want to focus on right now is the one that a lot of salespeople miss out on. And just completely, they don't think about it. Because maybe we've heard of things like, okay, like scarcity is an emotional trigger, right? There's all kinds of different ones. But nobody ever talks about the fact that one's competitiveness, especially at the C level, is a huge, huge emotional trigger. Never underestimate how competitive the people are at the C level. It's like part of their DNA. So they're very much interested in the competitive landscape, which, by the way, you can add that to your list of triggers. The competitive landscape is a huge trigger. Many of these people, they have a need to keep up with the Joneses. If they're really good at their job, they don't want to just keep up with the Joneses. They want to be ahead of the Joneses. They have this sense also of like what we call FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. FOMO, the fear of missing out. And you can leverage that to get people to really see the value in meeting with you, especially if you have something valuable to bring to the party that concerns competitors. And I'm not talking about like you're doing business with the ABC company and you steal that information and violate every ethical type of, you know, reasoning, and you go and just bring that information to a competitor. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about things that you know about the marketplace in general, things that you've observed, things that you have found, things that their competitors are doing that, to your knowledge, they're not doing. That kind of stuff, to someone at the C-level especially, is a trigger. You know, there is a technique that I teach in a lot of the courses, And I stole it from the movie The Social Network. You remember that movie a few years ago about Zuckerberg? Well, the scene I love to talk about, it's this one scene. They're all at like a sushi place, or I don't think it was a sushi place, some kind of trendy place, and they're all getting like shit-faced. Zuckerberg's there and, you know, his whole team. And they're hanging out with the guy, for the life of me, I can't think of his name, who was the guy who like had founded Napster way back when. And played by Justin Timberlake. And so what we're going to do, just for identification purposes, we're going to refer to him as Justin Timberlake. So there is like the Zuckerberg character hanging out with the Justin Timberlake character. And pardon me. You know, the guy from Napster is very interested in how Facebook, like this is like the early days when they're still over at Harvard and like starting this thing up. They're very interesting how much traction this whole Facebook concept had gotten, right? Way, way back when. So he said, you know, tell me about your plan. How are you guys doing this? So they started saying how one of the ways that they would do it when they were going after a bigger university is that they would sell the smaller universities and smaller colleges and community colleges around that bigger university and then go at them and like hit them with like some peer pressure. Or what they would do is maybe they would, you know, get one university, like one major Ivy League first, and then they'd go after the other Ivy Leagues and mention it. So as they were telling the story, then, you know, the guy from Napster kind of interrupts. He goes, ah, the little bighorn. I love it, right? So I had to look it up because I'm an asshole and I can't just like watch a movie. I'm like, wow, the little bighorn. I wonder if that's a technique. And guess what? It is a technique. I look it up. And they reference that thing on The Social Network. So the little bighorn is when in your communication you use a little bit of subtle peer pressure. And you mention, if you can, because sometimes ethically you can't, but if you can, and it's acceptable in your industry to mention that you've done work with the following companies or whatever, or that you've noticed that several of your competitors, specifically ABC and XYZ companies, are already doing this. So you're kind of surrounding them with this kind of, you know, this little friendly nudge to meet with you. And it's a very, very powerful one. This can work when you are approaching a company, obviously. It can also work if you're already doing work with other divisions of a company and you want to get additional divisions. So I want you to keep in mind. So, I mean, there you have it, folks. I mean, I have over, what, like 7 different things, with each one of them probably 2 or 3 different items. So you had a good 10 or 15 ideas today. We talked about today when we started that part of the reason why you could be getting objections is that you're a bit rusty, right? And both that day, because we're not really fully in that calling zone until after we've done a few calls. I gave you some ideas for some warm-ups and things. I gave you some ideas also to like that 2-2-2 formula where each and every day you're staying with this. We talked about your own awareness and using this concept of like game tape. We talked about their awareness of you. Part of the reason why they're shutting you down might be that they're just not familiar with you. And we talked about how you can create propinquity by using other forms of outreach. Again, it's not one versus the other. It's all of the above. We talked about researching better and specifically looking for triggers. Triggers are very, very important because, again, it's like that situation where we know where that car is going to be on the side of the road, and we have the tow truck. So it can dramatically increase the probability of someone taking a meeting with you and actually more of those deals getting across the finish line. We talked about redoing and reversing the order of your opening statement. The mistake a lot of people make is that they lead with something about their company. Let's not do that. Let's take that research that we've done and let's lead with something about them, and then we'll tie it in with something about us. We talked about the importance of evidence and how it's there to really reduce that skepticism and doubt and people pushing back and objections, right? And I gave you different forms of evidence, and there's actually a lot more than what I gave you, but that at least gets you thinking. And then we talked about the importance of hitting emotional triggers and using a technique called the little bighorn. So if you found value in this, I would highly recommend that you go to yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyourcoldcalls. yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyourcoldcalls. I have a download that it's not free, by the way. It's there's just a ton, over 75 ideas, by the way, that I share in that download, including this part is going to make you very happy. Aside from the 75 tips and tactics that I share, there are 20 templates that I share, like for prospecting. So this will be a big help to you. So if you visit yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyourcoldcalls. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.